What a blessing to be here. I appreciate your pastor allowing us to come. We were here last year. We kind of dropped in on a Sunday night, I believe it was. We were singing over in Cantonment for Pastor Joe Davis. They don't have an evening service. They have an afternoon service. And so we had a free evening. We came over. Always wanted to come here. And so it was a blessing, but couldn't wait to get back. And so I hope today will be a real encouragement to you. I want to encourage you to come back tonight. We'll do a concert tonight. And there's nothing else going on tonight, is there? Not from an eternal perspective. Let me say it that way. Just ask yourself this question. Where would God have you to be Sunday night at 6 o'clock tonight? Where would he have you to be? You answer that question with an honest heart, and we'll see you at 6 o'clock. And by the way, I love football. Okay, so I'll be here at 6 o'clock. I hope you come as well. And you can technology allows you to record the game, and you can come. You can watch it when we're finished. Amen. 2 Timothy chapter 1 this morning. And Pastor mentioned that we're out of Old Paths in Rochester. That's yes and no, we are there. Our sending church is actually Grace Independent Baptist Church in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, just a couple hours west of here. We moved there, I believe it was in 2008, right? And we use that as our sending church. But we're originally out of Old Paths. Matter of fact, we were one of the charter families, if we could say it that way, at Old Paths. Pastor Camilleri was the best man in our wedding. And he's a dear friend. I've known him for 30 years, and he's just a great Christian man. We love him very, very much. As a matter of fact, you'll probably see two Bibles in all of America, like this one, and one's his and one's mine, because we purchased it on the same night from the same person's trunk of his car. We were in Bible Institute together out of First Bible Baptist Church in Rochester, New York, and we took a break from our class, and our Bible teacher said, I have 10 of these in my trunk. They're $50 a piece normally, $25. They were getting rid of them, moving them off, and all of us went out and got one. He got one, and I got one that same night, and I believe he still uses his. His has been nicely rebound. Mine has not been nicely rebound, and so, you know, pages are falling out and things like that. So but everyone wants to know about our Bibles, but Pastor Camilleri is one of the other ones that in this country that uses that particular Bible. If I were to mention these words, I want you to think about what they are, and you can someone can just mention it out loud when you realize where I'm going here. If I were to mention Waterloo, or the surrender at Yorktown, or Gettysburg, or Bunker Hill, or the invasion of Normandy, what am I talking about? War. More specifically, specific what? Battles or battlefields. That's correct. What I want to do this morning for a few minutes is I want to talk about the greatest battlefield on earth. Books and whole libraries are filled with volumes of these particular battles, these great battles that defined nations in history, changed the outcome of history in our past. And yet, very few are written about what I believe is the greatest battleground of all. And that's the battleground of our mind. The battleground of our mind. In 2 Timothy 1:7, we read these words, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." So we can read it this way. God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but he has given us the spirit of power, and he has given us the spirit of love, and he has given us the spirit of a sound mind. Now, the unique thing is that those two words, sound mind, here's what they mean. They mean self-control or moderation. Self-control or moderation. You know, in all those battles that they fought, tremendous amount of self-control is required, isn't it? These men go to boot camp. We have military in here now. I sure appreciate your sound guy. He came up and he had everything in order, and he said, "I'll have you on if it's ringing. You tell me." And it was one cut and dry. And when he walked away, my wife said, "Whoo!" And I said, "I think he was in the military." And I like it because that's kind of like me. I hate being late. I like being on time. I like order, and I like that very, very much. And unless you have that, you're going to be in trouble on the battlefield. And that's why boot camp is so difficult. They tear you down in everything you think you believe, and they put you back into one unit so that you'll do everything you're told so that you can, one, survive, and two, win the battle. It requires a tremendous amount of mental discipline. It's more than physical ability, it's mental discipline. Napoleon Bonaparte, he knew a little bit about battle. He said the battlefield is a scene of constant chaos. Constant chaos. The winner will be the one who controls that chaos, both his own and his enemies. Constant chaos? That's not what they told us in school. Well, that's what reality is. The one who wins will control his own chaos and the enemy's chaos, and then you get victory. How do you do that? You do that through mental discipline. You have to have mental discipline. It gives you the ability to discern and filter chaos, to make sense of it, and to reach heights of success and victory you never imagined. You know, I've been meditating this week on the mind, using my mind to meditate on the mind. Everything comes from this right here. You know, if we can put it in our modern terms, this is the software that runs the hardware. And every one of us needs an upgrade from time to time. So the hardware acts properly. Everything comes from the mind. How is it that two Christian people can go through the same experience and one act the right way and the other one fall apart? I submit on you, it has a lot to do with how they thought through the process.
Yeah.
Why? Because the promises of God to both those people didn't change. It's not one way for one person and another way for another. The promises of God are steady and steadfast. They're a straight line. So how is it that some react one way and some another? Right here. A breakdown right here in the mind. In the mind. Derrick Henry, he's a running back for the Tennessee Titans. He's not in the Super Bowl today. But he was drafted last year, second round, and he came out of Alabama. And listen to this. He's a physical specimen, that guy. He has all the tools to be a great football player, physically speaking. But listen to what his running backs coach said about him. From a physical standpoint, his football talent is obvious. Now, the mental toughness, the mental discipline, how to truly be a professional football player, that is the key, and it will determine how much success he's going to have and how much he'll be able to help our football team. Wait a minute. This guy is 6'3", 225 pounds, somewhere along those lines. It's all muscle. He's not someone you'd want to run into at any point in time or you'd be in the hospital. But he was just physically able to run a football and play the game of football. He's done it probably all of his life. How is it that he couldn't succeed at that level? Well, think about it. Everybody at that level is a physical specimen. Every single NFL player is a tremendous athlete. You don't get to that level unless you have the physical tools. So the playing field in that regard is level. They're all athletes, every one of them. They're all endowed with this tremendous physical ability. What separates the great ones from the average ones? Right here, the mind. The challenges of the football field, the ups and downs of a career. You go through stretches where you're doing great and you act like an all-pro and play like an all-pro, and then you have these down years. A lot of times the rookies will play really well when they come in, and then the next year they call it the sophomore slump. Well, they have a sophomore slump. Well, if they do, they got to deal with that right here because their physical abilities didn't change from their rookie year to their second year. Didn't happen. Well, what happened? Right here. Defensive coaches began to get film on them and figure out how to exploit their weaknesses. So what are they going to do? If they're going to succeed, they're going to overcome it right here in the mind. So the mind is very, very important. Does the Bible say anything about the mind? Sure, we just saw that verse about a sound mind. God has given us the spirit of self-control. You might say to yourself, Brother Miller, I can't overcome the thoughts of my mind. I go through struggles mentally and I just can't overcome. Are you saved this morning? Now, if you're not saved, then I can understand your complaint. But if you are born again, that verse right there tells us that He has given us the power of self-control.
Yeah.
That means we can do what we're supposed to do, and we don't have to have bad thoughts and dwell upon them. We do not have to. In Ephesians chapter 4, don't need to turn there, verses 23 and 24, it says, "And be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. In order to put on that new man, you have to be renewed first in the spirit of your mind. Mental discipline, mental strength. Go to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. Look what it says in verse 1. Very well-known verses here. Romans 12, 1, it says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, tells us who he's talking to. He's talking to saved people. Because the things he's going to mention here can't be accomplished by a lost man. It's impossible. So he's speaking to you if you're a Christian. If you're not a Christian in here today, you can't do what he's going to command here. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Look at verse 2. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You see, if you're lost, you can't help but be conformed to this world. You're a child of the world. You have no hope but to be conformed to the world. But if you're a Christian, there's a commander that says, don't be conformed to this world. How? Be transformed first right here. It starts right here. Right here. The word implies a radical, thorough, and universal change, both outward and inward, that word transformed. It's the word, listen, it's the word metamorpho. Sound familiar? It's the Greek, it's the English word, we get the English word metamorphosis from it. What do you think of when you think of metamorphosis? What did you learn in science class? The butterfly. It goes into the cocoon one way, and it comes out a completely different creature. That's what transformed, that's what that word means. It's metamorphosis, a metamorphosis. It's the same word that is used for Christ on the Mount of Transfiguration. He was completely transformed in front of the disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration. It says to be totally transformed, to change in another form by how? The renewing of the mind. The word renewing there means a renewal, a renovation, a complete change for the better. And I love what Adam Clark says here. He says this, where the spirit, the temper, and disposition of the mind are not renewed, an outward change is of but little worth and but of short standing. In other words, if you don't transform the mind, anything that takes place outwardly is temporary. It won't stick. It has little value and little worth. Oh, we can, you know, even the best lost people may have tremendous character. We talked about the military earlier. They can get you to do some things. You can be very rote, and you can be you can follow certain rules, and you can try to turn over a new leaf. But after a while, if the mind's not transformed, you're in trouble. You're going to go back. You're going to fall into the old way again. Why? Because nothing was changed inside the mind. It's the software that runs the hardware. Without it, the hardware doesn't work properly. So how do we transform and renew the mind? He told us to do that, but how do we do it? My list here is not exhaustive, but I just want to give you a few thoughts on how you can renew your mind today. Number one, practice right thinking daily. Practice right thinking today. Today. Philippians 4:8, well-known verse. Listen. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, see it? Think on these things. Think on these things. Think on honesty and justice and purity and things that are lovely and of good report. Think on these things. Don't allow your eye gate or ear gate to engage in things that are contrary to this list of good, what I call mind food. What you see and hear will affect what you think about. Be careful of downtime. Be careful of just having some time off mentally and just going on the internet and browsing around. You've heard the old saying, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. It's still true today. And he'll give you something to watch that you'll wish you had not seen. Because it will affect you. It affects your mind. The Bible says to think on those things that are pure and lovely and right. Be careful about what you see on your computer and what you meditate upon. Take captive immediately any thought that does not honor God. Take captive immediately any thought that does not honor God. 2 Corinthians 10:5. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says this, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. We have upwards of 50,000 thoughts a day. Wow. 50,000 thoughts a day. Every thought, Brother Miller? Every thought. That's what that Bible verse says, right? Well, that requires a lot of diligence, doesn't it? It sure does. It sure does. Doesn't a soldier have to be diligent at all times? If he's not, his life is in danger. And the lives of his fellow soldiers are in danger. If a Christian is one thing, he needs to be diligent. 50,000 or more thoughts every day. Paul said, take every one of them captive to Christ. It works like this. A thought comes in. And they all happen. That happens to every one of us. None of us would want our thoughts just from this morning up on the screen. None of us. And it's not wrong to have that come in your head. We have an enemy. It's not wrong to be tempted. Don't beat yourself up because you're tempted. So when the thought comes in, we now have a choice. We have to filter it through our biblical worldview because we're Christians. So we filter it through Scripture. And when the thought comes in, we say to ourselves, is that a good thought that goes along with Philippians 4:8, or is it a thought that shouldn't be in my mind? And right then, immediately, relegate it to one of those two boxes, if you will. The thought comes in, you say, that's not something I ought to be thinking about. Out it goes. It's refuse. Gone. Okay? It's waste. Get it out of there. It's going to happen to you today. A thought's going to come in, you're going to say to yourself, oh boy, that's fine. It came in. You had no control over that. Now do something with it. Get rid of it. As soon as it came in, get it out. The thought comes in and it's holy and pure and right. Man, think on that. Dwell on that. Dwelling on that thought helps you from dwelling on the ones you shouldn't dwell on. And over time, you create habits, good habits, that'll help you in the future when those thoughts pour in. You'll say, I know how to handle this. I've handled it for years. And out it goes. Before long, you'll find out you're living a pure life and you're acting out a pure life because you've changed your mind. It happens. That's how it works. Every thought to the obedience of Christ. Victory comes through persistence and resistance. Persistence and resistance is where we find victory. You know, it doesn't have to just be a sin. It can be any kind of craving, something that's inappropriate. I like to tell this when I preach this message. About 8 or 9 o'clock every night, I get these cravings for something sweet, you know, and so I'd yell out to the family, make cookies or brownies or something along those lines. Well, guess what? If they weren't made on a particular day, I'd be craving it in the evening. And that's very strange to me. Well, you know what I did? I programmed my body to want something sweet every night at 8 or 9 o'clock. Guess what happened when I realized that that was wrong? And the reason it was wrong is because my doctor said, hey, buddy, you're pre-diabetic. You better cut out that sugar. Okay, sure, no problem. Oh, no problem. It was a problem. Those of you that have tried it, you know what I'm talking about. Because the same 8 or 9 o'clock came that night. And the night after that, the night after that, and I thought, nah, I can't have it. I got to back off. Well, after a little while, that craving was going, hey, feed me. Where did you go? Isn't that weird? I programmed my body to want sweets every single night. And so it demanded it. It demanded its way. And I gave in for years. Now I'm being told, if you want to live a healthy life, you better stop doing that. Well, I have, for the most part. I've cut way back, and my numbers are better. Can I tell you something? It wasn't without a fight. It was a battle. And they still come in from time to time. But you know something? Resisting now for, I don't know, the last 9 months or 10 months has made it a whole lot easier to say, you know, I don't need that brownie. I don't need that cookie. I'm okay. And it's gone pretty quickly. It's gone very quickly. It wasn't that way in the beginning. It's that way now because, listen, I've made a new norm. The new norm is I don't have to indulge on sweets at a certain hour of the night. I don't have to. It's the same way with sinful thoughts and bad behavior. I often show with this message a video, and I want you to write this down and look at it later. Go on YouTube and type in the backwards bicycle. Has anybody ever seen that video? The backwards bicycle. Okay? This guy has a bicycle. The only thing that's changed on it is that when you turn the handle this way, the wheel goes that way. Turn the handle this way, the wheel goes that way. You can't ride it. You cannot ride that bike. He thought he could. He couldn't. It took him 8 months. 8 months, 5 minutes every day, and he finally learned how to ride it. He'd travel with the bike, and he would offer $200 if someone could ride it 10 feet across the platform. He'd hold the $200 out like this. Come on. Nobody could ride it. Well, I'm like everybody else. I think I can. We all think we can. Well, we met a friend in Ohio who was so taken by that video. He's kind of a wealthy guy. He had one made and sent to him. He bought one. So I came out on the porch one day because we stayed up at his house one time, and there it is sitting on the porch. I said, oh, the backwards bicycle. I can try to ride. I know I can do it. Nobody else in the world can do it, but I know I can. I couldn't even balance on the thing. I couldn't get my feet off the ground for long enough to move the pedals. But this guy did it after 8 months, 5 minutes every day. Well, then he wanted to find out if he could go back and ride a normal bike like you and I can ride. Since he'd been riding since he was 6 years old, guess what? He could not. It's a fascinating video. Go watch it. What it tells us is that we can rewire our minds. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, wow, what an encouragement for people with addictive behavior. For years, they've abused themselves in some format, some fashion with some addiction, pornography or drugs or cigarettes or whatever it is, and they just can't overcome. It's the same with me and the sweets. I indulge every night, and so that's the norm. The guy, you've ridden a bike a certain way your whole life, that's the norm. Try to ride the backwards bike. You can't do it 5 minutes every day for 8 months, and you can. You literally rewire your mind. You can't go back to the old way. That's an incredible message. I couldn't wait to preach that to the RU ministry at our church, at our home church, and I did and have. It's a wonderful truth. We can literally, scientifically, science has proven it, we can rewire our minds. What are you struggling with today? What is it that you can't get victory over? Listen, you can get victory over it. You can rewire your mind, but it's going to take persistence and resistance and hard work and diligence. But you can overcome, especially since God has given you the power of self-control, the power of a sound mind. Take captive immediately any thought that does not honor God. Next one, commit your works to the Lord each morning. Each morning, commit your works to the Lord before beginning your day. Proverbs 16:3. Commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. How about that? Commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. The word commit there literally means as a man transfers a burden from his own back to one stronger and better able to bear it. So you wake up in the morning and you have the responsibilities of the day are weighing on you. Whatever they might be. At whatever level they're at, they're weighing on you. That verse says to me, if I'll transfer that over, those responsibilities, onto someone's back and shoulders who can bear it, my thoughts will be established. You know anybody who has the strength to bear your burdens and responsibilities? I do. It literally means to roll upon. The word established there means to be firm and stable. Stability of the mind? Imagine that. Would anybody like to have a more stable mind in here today? In other words, roll your burdens. your daily responsibilities on the Lord, and your mind will be stable. How about that? That's what Proverbs 16:3 is saying. Try it. Try it today. Try it tomorrow morning. Lord, I have a busy day. I have this trial. I have this medical condition. My mother's sick. I just had a death in the family. I can't. Lord, this is heavy responsibility. Roll it onto God's shoulders. He has big shoulders. Strong back. And He says that you will have stability of mind. Paul said that he died daily. Do you know that a dead man, this is profound, a dead man does not struggle with his thoughts? Who knew? He doesn't. He doesn't struggle with anything. He's dead. You walk up to a corpse and say, do you struggle with your thoughts? It's not going to answer you. People would think you're weird. You can slap it in the face, spit on it, pull its hair. It's not going to get mad or angry. It does not struggle with any thoughts. It's dead. The corpse, he nor she is dead. They're dead. If you die daily, you won't struggle with your thought life. Seek mental refuge in quiet places. Seek mental refuge in quiet places. That is difficult today, isn't it? I thought that technology was supposed to make our lives easier, more streamlined, and more efficient so that we would be able to enjoy life more. Not for me. The reality is for me, I don't know about for you, if I want to find a quiet place or mental refuge, I have to put the technology away. It's old-fashioned. Go into a room without any devices and sit there and meditate and think and pray. Someone said, the quieter you become, the more you can hear. It's true. Blaise Pascal, he was a 17th century French mathematician, physicist, inventor, and writer, and Christian philosopher. He said this, all men's miseries derive from not being able to sit in a quiet room alone. How about that? Think about that. In Psalm 91, we don't need to go there for time, but in Psalm 91 we have these beautiful words in verse 1. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Don't you love those words? How poetic is that? He that dwelleth in the secret place, that's a quiet place of refuge, is it not? Of the Most High shall abide under the shadow, the protection of the Almighty. And then the verse goes on to give all these promises, and it says in verse 5, listen to this. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night. Where does fear reside? Right here. Thou shalt not be afraid of terror by night. We live in a tour bus. We parked here last time we were here. It's 45 feet long, and we live in it full time. We don't have a house or an apartment anywhere. That's our home. And it's rarely quiet with 12 people. Now 11, we just put our oldest son, Daniel, who's here with us today. We're thankful for that, but we just put him in Pensacola Christian College. So we only have 11 now in 350 square feet. You can imagine that it's not very quiet. But in the middle of the night, it's pretty quiet, with the exception of one or two talking in their sleep. Oh, some great conversations. I should write a book someday. Although I'd get chastised by the brethren because some of it's tongues. They were done away with. They weren't done away with my bus, but they've been done away with theologically. Anyway, but for the most part, it's quiet. You know, I wake up sometimes a lot in the middle of the night, and I'll spend time reading and praying. But sometimes I wake up fearful. I have no reason to, other than that we're parked in a Walmart parking lot with cars whizzing by, and who knows what crazies are in them. But other than that, I shouldn't be afraid. I had no reason to be. I didn't go to sleep afraid. But sometimes I wake up afraid. You know what I have to do? Because that's all in my mind. For the most part, my life is pretty good. The Lord loves me. My family's following the Lord. They all love Christ as far as I know. I don't need to fear. So why am I afraid? It's residing in my head. It's only in my head. It's not even real. It's just in my mind. But to my mind, it's real. I have to get into that quiet place with the Lord and start reading my Bible. I'll get my phone out so I don't wake anybody up with lights, and I'll read my Bible and get along with the Lord. And guess what happens? The fear goes away. Fear goes away. Because it only resides in my mind. You must find time to be alone with God. Listen, you've got to have your quiet time. Don't forsake your quiet time. I said this to Daniel, the son we just sent to PCC. First week there, I said, Daniel, you're going to have a busy schedule. He's got work. He's working on campus, classes, all the social things that go on. I said, do not forsake your quiet time. If you do, all this will come to naught. It'll lose its attractiveness, and you'll begin to think wrong ways. Because there are students there, I know this is a shock to you, but there are students at a Christian college who don't exactly have a good walk with the Lord. Matter of fact, some of them are quite evil. I can say that firsthand now that he's been there for 3 weeks. He told me about some of the students in his dorm. Well, listen, there are people that are members of this church that are quite evil. And every single church of the 100 we visit every year. People are people. We have an evangelist friend in South Africa who said, you are as real as your quiet time. Ooh, think about that. You're as real as your quiet time. Listen to these powerful words from Isaiah. Isaiah 26:3. You've heard them. Listen to this. I'm going to show you something you probably haven't seen before. It says this. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. The word stayed means resting or leaning upon. So he says, you'll be kept in perfect peace if your mind is resting or leaning upon God. But those two words, perfect peace, our translators translated that correctly. But let me read the Hebrew words. Can I do that? Thou wilt keep him in shalom, shalom. The word shalom in Hebrew means peace. In Hebrew, it read, thou wilt keep him in peace, peace. For emphasis. Now, it wouldn't be appropriate in English to write peace, peace. That would make no sense. So our translators wisely put perfect peace. And that's it. And so they're giving us the sense. That's exactly right. God is saying, if you will keep your mind stayed on me, I will give you more peace than you can ever imagine. It'll be peace, peace. Perfect, undisturbed peace. If you'll keep your mind stayed on Him. Albert Barnes, one of my favorite commentators, said it this way. The mind that has confidence in God shall not be agitated by the trials to which it shall be subject. Bring it on. My mind stayed on God. Yes, we go through trials. Yes, we can yield to them and be troubled. You don't need to be. Keep your mind stayed on Him and you will have peace, peace. I love that. Now here's the key to all of it, and I'm almost finished. Someone said, the body achieves what the mind believes. The software controls the hardware. Okay? The key to everything I've told you is belief. You have to believe it. If you don't believe what I've said, you're never going to act upon it. It's not going to come to pass in your life. You know, if I went to the doctor and I had some malady and he said to me, oh, I know how to fix that. Here's a bottle of medicine. And he gave it to me and I brought it home and I said to Abigail, you know, I just don't believe that's going to work. Well, she'd say, well, the doctor said it would. He's a man who is an expert in medicine, and he's dealt with cases like yours before. He said it would work. And I might say, well, I don't believe it, so I'm not going to take it. Is my problem going to go away? No, it is not. Could it go away if I took the medication? Yes. But if I don't believe it and act upon my belief, it's not going away. My problem's not going to just disappear. And it's the same with us in the Christian realm. We have to believe it. We have to believe what God says, that we can be renewed in our minds, and we can go through the steps I've talked about this morning to see that come to pass and see a real change in our lives. Maybe you've been defeated for years. It doesn't have to remain that way. Start today with the renewing of your mind. Listen to the hindrance here. This is talking about Jesus. Matthew 13:58. And he, speaking of Jesus, did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. You mean the Son of God couldn't do something? That's exactly right. What kept him from doing something? Men, and they're not believing. The unbelief of man. That's pretty incredible to me. Unbelief is a mighty wall that God Himself won't scale. It's a hindrance to all progress. You have to buy into it. You have to believe it. When men go into the military and they go through boot camp, by the time they're finished, if their drill sergeant said, run through that wall over there, and it's a real brick wall, those guys are running right into that wall as hard as they can. They would believe they could knock the wall over. That's how you get things accomplished. Hebrews 11:6, but without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. You have to believe that God's able to give you freedom. You have to believe that He's given you the inward tools, if you're saved, to be free, like determination and a sound mind. And acting upon those beliefs will give you victory. Nothing happens if you sit still and bemoan your condition. Nothing whatsoever. Nothing. Water moves rock over time. Does it not? Water moves a rock. If I had a solid rock right here and we put a drip on it, if you came back in 100 years, you'd see a little bevel right there where the water had been dripping on it. It moves rock over time. But it takes persistence and patience to do so. Someone said, work until your idols become your rivals. Work until your idols become your rivals. But it does take work. Don't quit. You're not a quitter until you do. Renewing of the mind. It's a command, by the way. It's a command. And God has given us the tools to do it. I want to challenge you today, beginning of a new year, determine to change your mind, transform it through the power of God, and watch what He does in your life. Will you pray with me? Lord, thank You for this precious truth in Your Word and for the command to change. Thank You that we can change our minds. I pray that You'll help us all to do that, Lord. Help us have pure minds this year as we are just starting out in 2017. And Lord, may at the end of the year we say, wow, Lord, You've done such great things because my mind was focused on the proper things. Lord, bless the next service for Your glory and Your honor in Jesus' name. Amen.